Dr. Charles Tatter. I sometimes laugh when I say this, but he is now, I guess, basically referred to as the concussion doctor. I'm sure that probably drives him nuts.
Well, you could trademark that, Charles.
You could trademark it. He is a neurosurgeon at the Kremble Neuroscience Center at Toronto Western Hospital. And Dr. Charles Tatter wrote an article in the Globe and Mail on Friday. The NHL needs to do more to prevent head trauma among its players was the title. Interesting, though, I think, Dr. Tatter, and thank you very much for joining Stephen Brunt and myself.
Good morning.
Good morning. I think, as you said, you know, you looked at the contents of that email and didn't see too many things particularly surprising. As you say, a bit of denial, a touch of concession, and a lot of confusion about the short and long-term effects of head trauma. You also mentioned, however, that, you know, that there was mention that the league had been working with a couple of corporate sponsors on a concussion education video for youth hockey players. So I'm going to ask you just very simply, what did you make of those emails?
Well, on the one hand, I was happy that some of the work that I personally had done and the organization that I represent, which at the time was Think First, and now it's Parachute Canada, that we went to the NHL and asked them to help us with this video. And this is a great video. In fact, it's still available, and we still recommend it for teams, especially amateur teams, to sit down and look at that video and learn all about concussions. That video cost us a fortune, and It was supported by Reebok CCM and by Scotiabank, and it's really a great video, and the NHL did agree to give us footage for that video. I think that's one of the good things that the video has. It's like an exciting video because it shows NHL footage. It appeals to young people. That was the group that we were trying to reach with a concussion message. So in the email exchange, the fact that that video was flagged did make me happy. Other things in the email exchange that were, you know, less happy for me was the fact that there was still a good deal of denial. But yet, owners, for example, were in that email exchange, NHL team owners who said, look, concussions are a problem. So That was also good to see. But the fact that, you know, the NHL hasn't done more over the years, because that email exchange was 2011, so we're now in 2016, so 5 years have gone by, and I would like to see more concern about concussion on the part of the NHL.
And I acknowledge that, Charles, and I think I think a lot of people feel that way reading it. You know, I felt, I guess the other thing is, but I did kind of feel like I was on a fly on the wall for a discussion. You know, let's put it into 2011, you know, around the time of the death of the three enforcers, right? You know, different circumstances, different guys, but the death of Rick Rippon, Derek Bougard, and Wade Bielak.
Right.
And those, you know, the people in that discussion trying to kind of struggling with, you know, how do we connect the dots here? Should we connect the dots here? You know, how much of this is, you know, how much of this comes from something in the nature of the game or of the nature of fighting in the game? You know, you have a very old school perspective from Colin Campbell, but you also have some surprisingly progressive perspectives from Brendan Shanahan and Bill Daly. You know, obviously, look, they've got liability issues like every league, every contact sport has. They're going to, you know, they're all facing lawsuits. That's a reality for those businesses right now. But there was, you know, there did seem to be an actual desire to try and understand things, which, you know, that's not just denial or conspiracy or let's cover our butts. You know, it was unvarnished, I guess. It wasn't a PR exercise because they didn't think those things would ever go public.
Yeah, I agree with you. It was really fascinating to see them struggling with these issues. Now, unfortunately, the struggle did not translate into real change. The change has been gradual. Yes, there has been some change. So fighting is down. The number of enforcers is down. So some things have been done. The awareness of the concussion problem has grown gigantically since 2011. Like you, there's no parent, for example, of a kid playing hockey or football or rugby, all the collision sports, there's no parent now who can claim to be uninformed. Similarly, there's no NHL owner who can claim to be uninformed. So a lot of things have been done, which make me very happy. But I still feel in 2016, and that's why I wrote that comment in the Globe and Mail, that more can be done than has been done.
Charles, let me ask you, if for a day you were no longer the concussion doctor trademark registered, and you were instead, you know, the king of hockey, the king of, and again, let's just, hockey, we probably shouldn't separate hockey from football or MMA or boxing or all the other sports.
Soccer.
But let's say you can recast the sport of professional hockey in the way you want to recast it. What would it look like?
So here's what it would look like. I would start probably with the equipment. Like, it's crazy to have elbow pads and shoulder pads that are like sledgehammers. So why has the NHL and the rest of the hockey world, but the NHL are the leaders. We look to the leaders for leadership, and we haven't had that. So why have the leaders allowed those ridiculous elbow pads and shoulder pads to be perpetuated? They've made some cosmetic changes, but no real changes. Why have they allowed fighting to continue when somebody like Don Sanderson died as a result of a fight? And in fact, maybe more have been affected that we don't know about, but we certainly know about that one. And we know that although fighting only accounts for maybe 5% or 10%, you could get rid of those concussions overnight by saying fighting has ended in the NHL, just the way some of the amateur leagues have ended fighting. You fight and you're out. And that's the way it should be in the NHL. And why do we allow players to perpetually hit from behind? The unsuspecting player who gets hit from behind, that is ridiculous that we allow that. That could be done away with overnight by being strict. By strict, I mean, you hit from behind, you're out of the game. You do it twice, you're out for the season. You do it three or four times, your career is over. So those are really damaging hits. Why do we allow it?
Dr. Charles Tatter joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. One of the problems I think we have here is, when I say we, people have concerns about concussions in sports. I mean, there's three things we have to deal with. You've got to deal with the now, you've got to deal with the future, and you've also got to deal with the past. And unfortunately, dealing with the past usually means lawyers and money. Charles, is there a way of separating, of uncoupling how we deal with the past and allow us to move ahead in the future? So that one doesn't get dragged down by the other.
Well, to me, it's easy. I think, the NFL has probably shown the way. And it's surprising that it's taken the NHL so long. The NFL now acknowledges that concussions are an important issue. There are signs up in the locker rooms asking players to report when they've had a concussion. It's cost them over $1 billion, and probably that's not the end of it. But so far, they've agreed to pay the players $1 billion. So they've bitten the bullet. They've moved on. The NHL hasn't done that yet. Mm. They have to put the past behind them, as you say. They have to say, look, this is going to cost us money. We made a mistake. We didn't give it the importance that it deserved, and it's going to cost us money. Let's move on. In that email exchange, I was really interested to see that there were at least two owners who wanted real change, and the commissioner wasn't interested, basically. So why should that stall progress?
Charles, one thing I struggle with in this, and it does play to the whole issue of liability and who you settle with and you know how you deal with that. The connection between concussions and CTE. So let's start making dotted lines or connected lines. Concussions and head trauma, CTE, emotional issues, addiction, dementia. You know, the things that, you know, which are going to happen to athletes and they're going to happen to a portion of the population no matter what, whether they've ever played a game of hockey or ever had a head trauma in their lives. How strongly should we make those connections, especially that last one? Because, you know, this is where, you know, the NFL used to argue forever that, look, there's, you know, we don't want to settle with every former football player who ended up with Alzheimer's disease. Because mm-hmm. all kinds of people end up with Alzheimer's disease, or who had emotional issues, or who committed suicide. Yeah. That because in any portion of the population, those things are going to happen. Mental illness is going to be a reality. So we're not responsible for all of that in the entire population of ex-football players, and we don't want them to be able to stand up and say, "Look, this is what it did it to me. You know, you're liable."
Yeah.
How do we deal with that, Charles?
Well, you and I can't deal with it, but other people can, like the courts can. I think like any other liability issue, it's argued for and against. And I agree that we don't have all the information that we need in every case, but pretty well every week there's more information coming out. We are all on a learning curve with concussions. There's no doubt that the world is playing catch up because it was a neglected area of research. And even now, I can tell you, in our Canadian Concussion Center at the Toronto Western Hospital, we're spending a lot of money, but there are not a lot of people coming forward to support that research. Mm. It's very costly research. Last year, we spent $900,000 on research into concussion here, and we still don't have all the answers that we need. So you're right. Not all the evidence is there to allow every dot to be connected, but pretty well every week, more evidence comes along to make us, you know, very convinced that repetitive concussions and perhaps even what are now called sub-concussion blows, like we never had even had that language before 3 or 4 years ago, that there is a problem perhaps coming along with blows that are not even severe enough to cause a definite concussion. We may have to worry about those as well. So, yes, we're on a learning curve, but the evidence is mounting.
Will we get to a point, do you think, where this is not an adversarial conversation, you know, between, you know, people like yourself and the leagues? And I understand that, you know, again, there's a liability issue here, that the courts are by definition adversarial. They're protecting their interests and they're protecting their money. But is there a point where everybody's going to have the same set of interests?
Well, I think it's probably 10 years away when we can satisfy the last doubter that repetitive concussions cause brain degeneration. But, you know, and I look forward to the day, I hope I'm still around, when the certainty factor is there. Right now, it's, you know, very strong suspicion, and And I think the NFL was right to settle for $1 billion. I think, in fact, it's going to cost them more than $1 billion. But look, they bit the bullet, and that's and you move on. And I'd like to see the NHL do the same thing. And I think they'll be forced to.